Welcome to a new episode of So French, a podcast about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from our studio, still in the heart of Paris. My name is Stefan de Vries.
And my name is Sara Bertelsson.
And we're back. It was a long summer. It used to be a time when there was no news in July and August, but now even the sunny season is full of events and political developments. So in this edition, we will tell you all about the French president who still thinks he's got a chance to be re-elected in May 2017 and some of his ideas on how to do it.
And we also ask why the city with the world's most famous café culture has no coffee tradition. And of course, Mont des Camps is here with a fresh French word of the day.
But first, it was highly anticipated. The French president François Hollande gave his first major speech after the summer about democracy and terrorism. The event was highly anticipated by the media and his political rivals because it was seen as the kickoff of the new political season. Some even thought that he was going to announce that he would run for re-election. But he did no such thing. He talked about many issues, but not about the presidential elections in April next year.
So Stéphane, why did Hollande choose to give this speech at this specific time? What's the purpose of the speech, actually?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. The first most important one is that, of course, the political season has started again. All the candidates for the election next year have already talked the last couple of days. Many have given interviews on the left and on the right side, but Hollande was very quiet this summer. Of course, we had the
We didn't even know where he was.
No, indeed. We saw no photos of him with his girlfriend, Julie Gayet. We saw a lot of photos of Emmanuel Macron, his economy minister, who resigned last week. But where was Hollande? It is really the first time since the summer that he is back again in the spotlight. And because there are so many people who now have declared themselves a candidate for the presidential elections, over 30 already, over 30 hopefuls, he is not one of them. So everybody thought that this week he was going to say he was a candidate, but he didn't. The speech was also meant, of course, to reassure the French people that he makes sure that this country can stay free, that the fight against terrorism is going on, that France is still a strong country, etc., etc. So it was also to reassure the French. I'm not sure whether they took it like that, but
So did he deliver on what was expected from him?
Well, I think he delivered what was expected from him, but I think people expect very little of him nowadays. There was a poll this week that said that 88% of the French don't want to see him back as a president. 88%.
I don't think I think it's 88% don't even want him as a candidate.
Oh, well, that's even worse, actually. And there was also another poll that showed that he, if he will be a candidate next year, that he will probably finish fifth or fourth at best in the first round. So actually, François Hollande is really, really toast. But he's not admitting it. He still thinks that he has a good chance to be re-elected next year. But I think that's rather unlikely.
Well, he didn't say the words, but according to most experts, this was the launch of his campaign, actually, as a candidate to the elections. And many see the speech was the speech of a candidate and actually not of a president. But in the speech, there was a couple of points. He clearly pointed out Sarkozy in several points of the speech. And he also was at odds with his own prime minister.
Hollande clearly tries to set himself apart because the rhetoric now in France is very right, extreme right almost, and his own prime minister is very well agrees a lot with Sarkozy, actually, especially when it comes to identity questions, the Burkini, stuff like that. So François Hollande now wants to present himself as the more moderate candidate without the right-wing rhetoric of all the others. But at the same time, he talks about France, he talks about nationalism, he talks about being proud of being French. So, you know, it's very ambiguous because he knows that these are topics that the French voters want to hear from their candidates. So
I must say that I was a bit surprised that he, I was surprised that he didn't go, he didn't follow the path of, as we said, the right, this right-wing path. He actually did take a much more moderate and, to me, quite surprising path.
Well, I think he realizes that he is the president of all the French, so he should, you know, he's trying to look for some kind of consensus, not to step into the pitfalls of the extremist and the, you know, the fear and the terror rhetoric. But at the same time, we should not forget France is still in a state of emergency. So he says one thing, but in reality, he does something different. But it's clear that he's looking to distinguish himself from the all the right-wing talk we've heard this summer. Now, we'll probably talk a lot the next couple of months about the candidates. There's one thing, however, that's really worrying. I just mentioned that there are over 30 people who said that they want to be candidate, and there are very few women. Now, what's going on there, Sarah?
Well, we don't know what's going on. We just found out this week, actually, that on the right, in the Les Républicains, the Conservative Party, where we have most of the candidates, it's finally been announced that one candidate will be a woman, Nathalie Kosciusko-Morizet, NKM, she's known as here in France. She has now finally managed to get the endorsements that she needs to be a candidate. It's a very astonishing situation that in a country in 2016 with more than 30 candidates, you only have, well, for now, one, but we will maybe have not even a handful of female candidates. It doesn't look like a very modern lineup for an election, one could say.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. We'll talk about this topic much more often in the next couple of months here on So French. Well, it's the end of the summer. We're all back. And in France, they say it's...
La rentrée.
La rentrée, exactly. Maud Descamps is here to join us. Welcome, Maud.
Hi, Stephen.
And la rentrée is this episode's French word.
Yeah, la rentrée. And actually, I just found out that there's no word in English for la rentrée.
No,
there's
we don't know it.
There's an expression. It's the start of the school year or the go back or come back to school. In France, we do have a word for that, and this shows how important this event is for us French people. Apparently, there is something so French about La Rentrée. You and Sarah actually told me about this because I didn't notice, because I was born here. So for me, La Rentrée is something big, and I didn't know it was different in other countries. But also, when French people talk about next year, they actually means the next school year. Actually, the calendar of the school year is here in France more important than the civil year. And we also use the word la rentrée for politicians, but also for books. New books released happen in September. So everything in France actually happen in September and not in January or any other time of the year. But I have thought through this issue you might have with the word la rentrée or about the expression next year. So it's very easy. If you don't want to get confused, if some French people tells you, well, I'll see you next year, you just have to look at what time of the year you're in at the moment. So if it's in June, next year means
September,
exactly. Yeah. But if you're in November and I tell you, see you next year, this means?
Yeah, January.
January. It's very simple.
So we're living in a parallel universe in France. Finally, we have the proof. thank you very much. I'll see you at La Rentrée in January.
Well, I hope.
Earlier,
I hope
of course.
Before.
Next episode with a new word. Thank you very much, Maud.
Thank you.
Now, Paris is famous for its museums, art galleries, and antiquities. But this week, the capital's chic art world was shocked by a rather peculiar affair. It all happened in the very posh Hotel Drouot. That's the world's largest auction house. Now, what's the story there, Sarah?
Well, this court case actually is about 35 employees at this auction house. They were accused of having been stealing over a long period of time thousands and thousands of valuable items and then selling them off to make money for themselves. This happened actually when it's called the porters. I learned this word this week. I don't know if you knew it before. The porters is a name for the employees who are actually in charge of handling the items before they go on sale. And it happens when these porters went to the houses, mostly of dead people, to pick up and choose the different items that was going to be sold at the auction house. And that's when, well, one to the auction house and one to the porter himself, and 35 people.
That sounds as a perfect plan, actually. What went wrong? What was it that eventually unveiled their scam?
Well, it was sort of the more extravagant lifestyle of some of these porters. It has been declared some of them were driving around very luxurious cars, Porsches, and things like that. And then eventually there was a tip off, and the police found a missing painting by the famous French painter Gustave Courbet, a 19th century painter, at the house of one of the porters. And then they started this investigation, and of course, more and more items were found.
And how could it go on for so long? I mean, thousands of objects, that must have been a huge organization. Well,
they said that this was a system, it was put in system, and quite a few people actually knew about what was going on. But they're even in this court case, they're not only the porters, there's also auctioneers. I think it was three auctioneers who was also convicted because they had been taking some money from the porters. Wow. To not talk about what was going on. So it was a code of silence, one could say. People knew what was happening, but you know, they were all making a bit of a profit from it. So no one had an interest of actually going to police or tell.
What was their defense?
The defense, I must say, is probably the worst part of this story, is that some of the porters argued that, well, to begin with, they didn't know that these objects were valuable, which is a bit not really trustworthy of someone who works in an auction
exactly.
house. And the second part, they were saying that they had only been stealing from the dead.
And what did the judge say?
Well, about 3 years of prison for these employees.
And how did the auction house defend themselves?
Well, they say they had no idea what was going on behind their doors.
Well, that's probably what they told the highest bidder. This was the auction scandal in Paris this week. And now it's time for some coffee. Maud Descamps was on a mission this week because she was investigating into a new phenomenon in Paris. Good coffee. It's really rare, isn't it, Maud?
It is, apparently. And good coffee is finally available in Paris. This is something I didn't know till a few months ago. We French people have been drinking bad coffee since, well, ever. And you probably experienced it many times here in Paris, Stefan.
Yeah, it's true. Every time I have a coffee, and it's every morning, early in the morning, I really like coffee. I need it, but I often think, well, what's wrong with the water in this coffee? But, you know, I am used to it as well. So, but once you're in Italy, for instance, and then you drink a real espresso, then you think, this is how coffee should taste.
Okay. So, well, what I realized is that we do have a café culture here in France, but we don't have a coffee culture. Let me explain. Every morning in any city or village in France, if you go to the café around, let's say, 8 o'clock, 8:30, you will find a bunch of French people drinking an espresso at the counter while, I don't know, reading newspaper or talking about sports. This is actually a tradition. I think it's like, it might be the favorite time of the day of every French people, with the apéro, of course. But the coffee they're drinking is so bad in so many ways. And this is what Shanna explained to me a few days ago. He is the owner of Le Loustic, a coffee shop in Paris, and one of the few baristas we now have in Paris.
Café culture in France is fantastic. The actual product, the coffee that's in the cup, is awful. And all that needs to change is the actual product. We don't have any baristas in France. Quite simply, there's just a lack of education. We don't have baristas. We don't have trained baristas who know what they're doing with coffee, quite simply. Your grandmother could make a better coffee. The people who make your coffee in a traditional Parisian cafe have absolutely no idea what they're doing. They'd be quite surprised if they came into here and they found that it's all done like cooking. It's all weights and weights, measures and timing. It's like baking a cake. And there are flavors in the coffee, and we talk about the flavors in the coffee.
And Shanna is actually right. It is not some French bashing. It is very true. Listen to Robert and Jade. They're both Parisian. They're a couple. And every morning, they go to Le Loustic to enjoy a real cup of real coffee.
It's one of our favorites.
I really love the quality here.
And it's such a special mood here. We really like how we can sit here. We have a lot of choice, cappuccino, l'aéropress, the Chemex, and today I'm trying Kimbo.
We didn't know espresso or cappuccino before.
We stopped going to traditional cafe 15 years ago.
But that's because we were disappointed.
And that's what I said. Little quality for a lot of money, really.
Shanna, the owner of Le Loustic, is now hoping that one day coffee making and baristas will be acknowledged as part of the French gastronomy.
Now, these guys clearly know how to make a good cup of coffee, but where can we find them?
Well, you can find them in Rue Chapon Street, in the third arrondissement, third district of Paris, which is like the very center of Paris.
Okay, so if you're visiting Paris, listeners of So French, then you know where to have a good café. Merci, Maud Descamps.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up this episode of So French. You can follow us on Twitter at So French News. And if you have any questions or suggestions, we welcome any of your emails on sofrench@sofrench.news.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or in SoundCloud. And you can also find us on the TuneIn Radio application. And please share the podcast with your friends. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French. We hope you will join us then. Until then, thank you for listening and au revoir.
Au revoir.